Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Here on a Tuesday, the third week in a row that we bring you the now expanded edition of Political Rewind, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We seem to be expanding all the time. So thank you for joining us for the show today. As usual, we love the fact that across the state of Georgia, there are so many of you listening to the show on the radio. We love the fact that some of you will be listening to this when it becomes a podcast. And our Facebook Live audience has been growing by leaps and bounds. And I just very quickly have to say, yesterday was an unbelievable day in terms of your participation. Those of you who are Facebook Live viewers, 3,300 people at one point or another were part of the show. We had like 1,090 or 1,100 people actually watching us through the show, either live on the air or afterwards. And we had hundreds and hundreds of people commenting. And all I can tell you is we're thrilled that that Facebook Live community is growing. And I know that's a small percentage compared to all of you who are listening on the radio, but we love having all of you with us. So lots to talk about today. We're going to start with introducing the panel. We have the boss, the editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Mr. Kevin Riley, at the table today. Hi, Kevin. Great to have you here.
Great to be here, Bill. Thanks.
Later in the show, we're going to take advantage of your expertise, because before you were editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, you were editor-in-chief of the Dayton News. So you know all about this 12th District congressional race going on just north of where you were working.
Absolutely.
Good. We'll talk about that as we get going. Nan Orrick is with us. State Senator Nan Orrick. She's been on the show many, many times. She is formerly a member of the State House, now been working. How long have you been a senator now, Nan?
A dozen years.
Has it been that long?
It has.
Wow. Great.
Six terms.
You just came back from a national conference of state legislators, you told all of
us
in the studio, a nonpartisan gathering.
That's right.
What were some of the biggest issues you all talked about?
Well, in my committee, which is Natural Resources and Infrastructure, I submitted a resolution on offshore drilling that all our state's governors should be able to opt out and have that be their choice. You know, good old states' rights. It was not approved by the three-quarters majority that our rules require there, but very robust discussion and something that's near and dear to the hearts of Georgians, that our beautiful 100-mile coast that we want to protect.
Yeah, which we ought to remind people, Governor Deal has not in any way taken advantage of the president's opening for states to start allowing offshore drilling to this point.
You know what? You're exactly right.
Yes.
Georgia stands out like a sore thumb. I've talked about it from the well of the Senate, that we need to address it and get in line to opt out, to have it be a state decision.
Okay.
He's the one governor on the East Coast that has not weighed in.
Okay. We should say the National Conference of Legislators, you liaison with the federal government on the issues that matter to legislators across the country. Mark Rountree, I think founder and president of Landmark Communications, political consulting and polling firm. We haven't seen you for a while. I'm really glad you're back today, Mark.
Thank you for the invitation.
You have a client in the Georgia race, and we always like to be transparent. Who's your client this year in 2018?
Landmark Communications is running the campaign for Brad Raffensperger, the Republican for Secretary of State.
All right, great. We're going to actually talk about that Secretary of State position a little bit in a little while now, because there are some Democrats once again raising questions about Brian Kemp's involvement in that office, even as he runs for governor. And Professor Dr. Audrey Haynes from the University of Georgia joins us. I'm glad to have. Thank you for making the drive in from Athens.
Well, thank you. Since all the students are coming back, it was actually safer in Atlanta today. Honestly, they were so happy to see them.
When do they come back?
Well, they're back.
Oh, they are. When do classes start?
The 14th.
Wow.
I'll tell you what.
What's your official title at the Political Science Department?
So I have a few.
Yep.
I'm an associate professor. I'm a Joseph Meigs something special professor teaching.
Boy, and I hope that isn't an endowed chair. You well, already had it right.
I did
Bill,
get
really
a,
what she throws around is yeah. the okay. fact that she's a guest on this show. Yeah. That's no, the thing that matters.
Wait, now Josiah Meggs, honorary teaching professor.
Okay.
But it came with a raise, so I'd better get it right.
Yeah.
And then I'm the director of the Applied Politics Program, mm-hmm. and something that we're very proud of it.
You know, we should at some point, we're not going to be able to do it today because there's so much to cover, but when you come back, you're going to talk to us about the Applied Politics Program. I think that would be just great, okay?
Yes, I would love to.
All right, now let's start. Mark Rountree, we thought we knew. Tom Faust, Robert Jemison, and I sat down, went over the rundown for today's show, figured where we were going to start. You came in with a surprise gift all wrapped up with ribbons for us. You have a poll that you haven't released on the governor's race. Tell us about this.
We've not released it. We're polling frequently. We've done probably 12 to 18 of them this year just on some of the statewide races. The most recent one was about a week ago. It was after Kemp had clinched the nomination in the runoff. So this was just a three-person test. It was Kemp, it was Abrams and Metz as the Libertarian. And in the survey, it shows a virtual dead heat. We have Brian Kemp up by one percentage point, 46 to 45, with about three, I guess, going for the Libertarian.
How big was the sample size?
Let me look. It was 750 statewide.
Pretty good size sample. And as you say, pretty much too close to call, because with a sample size that large, 3-4 point margin of error, I would think.
Yeah, actually, it was a 3.6 margin of error.
Okay.
And yeah.
Well, I got to ask, Bill. Mark, so if you were advising Brian Kemp, what would you say to him about the poll, given the timing and everything else? And then if you were advising Stacey Abrams, what would you say at this point in time?
Well, I guess what we're going to talk about today is going to be the difference between genders. And we've talked about that before the show. It, not just in Georgia, but nationally. It's probably not quite as pronounced here in Georgia as it maybe is in some of the other parts of the country. Much of this will have to do also with Brian Kemp just reconsolidating the Republican vote because, you know, I guess you could say Stacey Abrams had a good 10-week period to kind of put any hard feelings among Democrats to rest between their primary, which was nowhere near as brutal as the Republican. So I think it would be consolidate your Republican friends first and then move on from that.
So what do we think? I mean, this is the very beginning of the race that Mark's talking about having polled shortly after the runoff. Audrey, it does feel like, at least intuitively, and the early polling suggests that it feels like this could be a closer race than, at what, say, 8 years ago or even 4 years ago with the Republicans dominating the Georgia election map. Yes?
Yes, absolutely. But I would also add there's a long road ahead. So, you know, I look at that poll and I think it's interesting and I'd like to see what the demographics look like, especially with the potential gender gap there. But I was thinking about this last night. It's a long time until November.
We got 90 days, something like that?
We are, and that's a good point, if I may, and just in reference to what you're saying. In our survey, we are projecting presidential level turnout among African Americans. I think a lot of pollsters are going to make this mistake, especially if they're not in Georgia. They will not connect, I think, the degree of passion that African American voters are feeling toward electing
well,
Stacey Abrams.
We are
at projecting a high African American voter.
Kevin, your organization has polled for a very long time. I did it for years when I was at WSB TV. In fact, for quite a while, we partnered on polling. And setting the percentage of African-American vote mm-hmm. that we expect to turn out is always crucial to the outcome of a poll, as it is, of course, to the election, right?
Right. I mean, all you can do, right, is use your sample and then project that. And I'm interested, I hope you'll talk some about where you're getting that sense of enthusiasm, because that's a very tough thing to know, at least from a journalistic perspective, because whenever you go to events or politicians sort of set it up to look, make their side look enthusiastic, but curious, Mario.
Let me address this. Look at the last governor's race. You had an incumbent governor, Republican governor. You had the biggest Republican wave in the history of the country in 2014, and the governor for reelection got 53% of the vote. That should be an indicator to any observer right there, any reasonable observer, that this is a purple state. Yes, the Republicans won every election, and that was the closest of the elections. The down-ticket people went and soared up into the mid-50s, upper 50s, but in 2014. So that is the high watermark for a governor race in Georgia, unless something substantially different happens. And governors, the Republican governors usually are almost always, if you go back 10 years, Republicans have the top of the ticket person is beginning 52 to 53% of the vote.
All right, before we get too far away from it, how did you weigh African-American participation? What was the weighting you gave? What percentage did you assign to African-Americans?
32%.
That's, Nan?
Yes.
That's high?
That's what's real.
That's interesting, Nan, because it's really high. We usually think about African-American participation, I think, being, say, 28, 29%.
That's right.
So it may account, Nan, to some extent, for how Mark's figures show how close this race
sure.
is. Is he realistic?
Oh, I think it's realistic. And I'll say on the ground, the level of excitement and intensity and people knowing the name of the candidate this far out, people that are just not in a studio on Tuesday afternoon talking politics, but are out here earning a living, raising a family. The name recognition of Stacey Abrams, her reputation, the fact that she's garnered pro-business A's from Chamber of Commerce. She's been all across the state. She has a record to run on. And as she has explained over and over and over, we're going to go out here and throw out the welcome mat for all these voters that have not felt reached and touched by our campaign and our message over past years.
Well, and I would add, too, a lot of the research is saying that these increases are driven by Black women in particular. And one thing that you see in races generally is that when any minority sees someone who looks like them, they are far more likely to turn out to vote because there's real passion there.
All right. Well, it just so happens that Stacey Abrams last night was on the Trevor Noah, the Daily Show. This is an example of how much national attention this race is getting.
That's right.
She's been getting it, of course, because she would be a history-making governor should she win the race. At the same time, we should say Brian Kemp was back in our building again late this morning doing Fox News. I've mentioned on the show a number of times that Fox rents bureau space from us here. So everybody's getting their share of attention. But apropos of exactly what we're talking about, here's one of the things that Stacey Abrams said to Trevor Noah last night.
The real important piece of this, and I think why people get confused, I want every vote. But I'm going to center the votes of those who are the least likely to be asked to vote. And that tends to be people of color, predominantly African Americans. We live in a nation that has spent centuries denying the right to vote and spent decades creating barriers to that right to vote. And I have an opponent who is a remarkable architect of voter suppression.
Mark, the Democrats, we failed to mention that you do represent Republican candidates on your consulting side, but no one has ever questioned the objectivity of your polling.
If we release a poll, it's never for the purpose ever of helping a candidate.
Okay, but putting on your Republican consultant hat, there's no question that the Democrats and Abrams are going to try to make as much as they can out of Brian Kemp's tenure as Secretary of State, claiming voter suppression, that sort of thing. That's going to be a theme we're going to hear repeated over and over again. Is it a legitimate one is the question.
You're asking me if that's legitimate?
Yeah.
I think they're going to make the case no matter what, and they're going to make the case of Stacey Abrams' term as minority leader and as state house candidate. So I think record on both sides is going to play, but you know, they're as far as Kemp's record as SOS, given that nobody can have a flawless service, everyone can have something that can get poked at in reasonable terms, but there is nothing in Kemp's history that would preclude him from being an excellent governor.
Nan?
Kemp has really carved a path over to be seen as a right-wing extremist. If you look at his message, how many Georgians want to talk about guns and pickup trucks and hauling immigrants down to the border? That is not a winning message in the general. And I will,
go ahead.
Well, I will say to you, as Secretary of State, he was divisive in that role. He the nurses and there are hundreds of thousands in Georgia were extremely disturbed at the way he treated their service board and the fact that he was going to strip them away from. So I'm saying people that had to rely on his services as SOS have had huge issues with him, and I thought it was incredibly politically clueless of him to go and alienate the nursing community, vastly female, and push them around and be the tough guy bully on that. And it just goes on. But he's got a record of having the courts force him to go back and undo what he's done as Secretary of State on purging polls.
Let me go back to this issue of how the Secretary of State's office over the years, under his leadership, has handled voter registrations and that sort of thing, Audrey. So we know that Kemp and Abrams, long before they realized they were going to be opponents in a general election, were at odds with one another when Stacey Abrams was involved with the organization that was trying to register tens of thousands of new voters. She accused Kemp of throwing out many of those voter registrations inappropriately. So obviously that's going to remain an issue in this. What's interesting to me about that, though, is if I'm on the Kemp side of this, in the Kemp campaign, I think I might point out that it was under Brian Kemp's leadership that the state developed an app that would allow people to register to vote using their phones. In many ways, earlier in his tenure, if I'm the Kemp people at least, I'd want to highlight what I did to make it easier for people to register.
Yes, except that if you went on that page and you went to the social media and clicked on it, it linked to his campaign.
Well, right.
Yes.
I mean, right. Clearly
and that's
that
not small,
was...
that's large. Yeah, that's Bill, not small,
I just
that's
think
large.
That, look, if you're on one side of this issue, you're going to support Brian Kemp because you do believe that not just anyone should be allowed to vote without proving who they are and that they should be voting. If you're on the Stacey Abrams side of the issue, you're going to feel like lots of people should be registered and allowed to vote. I kind of think the issue will cancel it out because people are where they are on that.
Yes, and I would add too, you know, I have talked to people who do this, and the bottom line is, you know, there is sometimes a significant amount of purging, and people who would like to vote and are, should legally vote are purged off those rolls. It's happened to a friend of mine. It happens, and, you know, they owe it to people to make sure that they give them an opportunity to get back on those rolls. So voter suppression can happen, and also, you know, Brian Kemp can probably do some good things, like the app that it helped me the other day. So, you know, there are pros and cons on either side.
So,
well, I do think his record, he's been taken to court repeatedly, and the courts have ruled against him and made him go back and clean up his mess.
So,
he also didn't guard, he was not a good guardian of our database. He had two huge blips, and then that's highly questionable.
So it's interesting that there have been people on the Democratic Party side who've questioned whether you can run an election as Secretary of State while you're participating in an election. The reality is we've seen over the years that any number of secretaries of state have run for either re-election or election to a new office while they oversaw the election. But here's what's interesting, Mark. DuBose Porter, the chairman of the Democratic Party, issued a statement saying not whether Kemp is capable of running an election in which he's participating, but calling on him to stop taking his salary, since what he's really doing is spending all his time out there running for office. I thought that was an interesting new way to approach it, but it seems contrary to the message that some Republicans or Democrats are trying to get out about he can't do the job if he's running for the seat.
I put that into the category that Kevin did for basically technical lists. You had DuBose Porter serving at the same time that Mark Taylor was running for governor. You had the same for Max Cleland. He was there. I don't remember him making these same statements at the time.
No, I think Cleland, actually, there was a reason why he was no longer Secretary of State. I think he stepped down. But Kathy Cox, when she was Secretary of State, did in fact run in the Democratic primary for governor against Mark Taylor. So we did see some of that. So it's interesting, Kevin. I mean, you're right. This is all just fodder for each side, right?
Right, right. I mean, as the senator said, you know, average people are working for a living, trying to get their kids through school, trying to make a living. They're not debating the nuances of something like this. It doesn't make that much sense.
It's much more inside baseball. But one, I think that people really and I do obviously take great issue with it, with the role, with the way he's handled his responsibilities poorly as the Secretary of State.
Okay, let's look at another thing that's come up in the governor's race. We know that the Republicans, Audrey, have started this race doing their best to define Stacey Abrams as too liberal for Georgia. The National Republican Governors Association has put a bunch of money into ads, and now there are other organizations that are coming to the side of Brian Kemp. Let's listen to just a little bit of a brand new commercial from one of the gun groups, pro-gun groups in Georgia, an attack on Stacey Abrams, and let's all talk about the effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of this ad.
Ban, confiscate, destroy. That's the Stacey Abrams radical agenda for Georgia gun owners. Stacey Abrams isn't just a leftist. Abrams is a Bloomberg Soros hate America leftist. Ban, confiscate, destroy. That's Stacey Abrams' gun control scheme.
Kevin Riley, a Bloomberg Soros hate America candidate. That's pretty heavy language.
That's pretty rough. And as we know, unfortunately, negative advertising does work. That's why people do it. I think this idea of her being painted as affiliated with outsiders, we watched that go on in the Handel Ossoff race, where Ossoff and Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, who I don't even know if they'd ever met, I mean, were portrayed together. And I think that, you know, that is a very human, emotional way to get to people, is that, you know, someone who's not one of us is trying to do something to you. I mean, it's selling fear, it's all that stuff, and I think she's going to be up against that throughout.
Yeah, what do you think about the tone of that ad, Mark? I mean, Kevin's right, we know negative advertising works, but that's a very harsh commercial. In the long run, is that going to play to Brian Kemp's favor, or is there going to be some reaction to it among more centrist voters, if there is such a thing these days?
Well, it's one of those kind of ads that it doesn't make any statistical points, so there's nothing to really debate about other than you believe it or you don't.
Well,
I really don't know, again, if swing voters are going to connect with that. I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier about consolidating
the
Republicans more so.
Sure.
I don't know who that was targeted to. I don't know who I don't know that, but that would make sense to me. I will say that it will be a redeeming time in Georgia if we enter an entire general election and the Democratic Party of Georgia does not put out racial advertising against Republican candidates, but runs on issues. That is far worse.
We
some of the stuff I have seen.
We haven't seen it yet, have we?
No, we have not.
That is what needs to be stopped. That kind of behavior needs to be stopped.
Nan?
Well, first of all, you have a party that's virtually all white in this country, one of the two major political parties. That's a problem right there when we have when we're looking at where our country is going demographically. And we're going to be at a 50% plus minority population in this very state before that long. So to turn and I think the Charlottesville instance, I think the Trump's long, strong record of racism, all of that is fair game, and all fair-minded people should be denouncing it.
All right, let me bring you
in. But that's not what you've heard from Stacey. You've heard public
all
education,
right.
Small business.
All right. Let me
rural
get
hospitals.
Let me get Audrey
healthcare.
Back here. Audrey, Nathan Eli Thomas is watching on Facebook Live, and here's what he says. I feel like this race is leaving all of us more centrist voters out in the cold. I can't bring myself to support either of these candidates. And this is a race that seems to be running to the base of each party.
So I want to thank Nathan for that comment. And one thing that, as a political scientist, I will tell you, if you look at the distribution of voters, you know, nationally, we've looked at them, it's bimodal. So it looks like two hills separated with this little dip in between. And when you run ads like, oh, my God, that person is horrible, you know. So these guys hear it, and they're like, oh, we're afraid of that person. These guys hear it, and they go, wait, they hate our person. We want to like our person. Our person is Superman. There's that. We want to love our politician, hate the other one. It goes for both parties. But then there are those people in that little dip, and they really honestly don't feel like they have anyone they can listen to. And that goes us back to O'Connor in Ohio, where he's trying to run like Portman did. Solve your problems. Let's talk about our community problems. Let's talk about our district. Let's talk about our state. Let's not do that. And, you know, maybe...
And I think that's what Stacey's doing.
And that I was just about to segue to that, yeah, Nan, and say, right. I think that, you know, Stacey has talked to so many people. I think she's heard what Nathan is saying now. And if you listen to her talk, I heard her talk about guns on the daily. And I didn't know it was her talking. I had turned it on. I was doing something else. I didn't know it was Stacey Abrams. And I'm like, that's a moderate talking about guns running as a Democrat. That's really right. Interesting.
Right, I got to get a break in. But Kevin Riley, you know, it's interesting. Your newspaper, you obviously are looking for the most readers, subscribers as you possibly can get. And you have to find this way to appeal, as you've done, to both sides. So you've got the conservative column, you call your columnists to the right, columnists to the left. You let us know that sort of thing. You remind us continually, while, yes, George Will tends to be more conservative, we also have a liberal equivalent. So you, of all people, should understand this notion of how you find a center to appeal to when people are so polarized.
Right. It's a very tough thing, because more and more it seems like the ends are pulling, you know, the center doesn't hold, that old saying. And it's getting harder and harder, because for some people, the left isn't left enough and the right isn't right enough.
All right, we got to get a break in. We'll do that. And when we come back, we have so much more to talk about, including the gender gap, including that 12th district race that's going on in Ohio right now that might tell us something about where this election is headed as we move to the fall. This is Political Rewind.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Kevin Riley is with us. So is Senator Nan Orrock, Professor Audrey Haynes, and pollster and political consultant Mark Rountree. Good panel today. All right, let's put the governor's race aside, if we can, for a few minutes. By the way, before we do, I want you to know, I mentioned this once before, we now have our new Political Rewind ceramic versions of the Red Solo plastic cups that so many of you have seen. And I am told that with Pledge Drive coming up in about a month, you might be able to acquire one of these if you decide to become involved with GPB. We'll see how that
goes.
Well,
applause for moving away from a single-serve plastic cup.
Should I give back the one I hid in my bag?
Straws, I saw that.
Americans use 500 million plastic straws a day. We have a plastic pollution issue.
And we have to say that there are many, many companies that are now saying, food service companies saying they're giving up the plastic straws.
Yes, it's a good direction.
That. All right. So a couple things. Number one, we should point out one of the primaries today, and we'll just talk about this very briefly, is taking place in Kansas, where, you know, you have an incumbent Republican governor, Jeff Collier, who's, you know, people seem to have liked his work over the years, Mark, but unfortunately for him, he's running against Kris Kobach, who is one of President Trump's favorites. He's the guy who the president appointed to run his voter commission, looking at where to find those 3 million illegal voters from 2016.
Yeah, that failed voter commission.
He is, I think, under, by most measures, pretty far to the right on the Republican spectrum. And the president has stepped in and said, "You're my man," once again, as he did in Georgia, stepping into a primary fight. What do you think about that?
Well, I guess it's fair to say that Trump is doing a pretty good job of winning his, at least helping his candidates win.
He's cleaning up. He is cleaning up.
Most of them are not like Georgia. A lot of these, though, have been sort of a predetermined moment as to he's endorsing when they realize someone's going to win. So it's not quite as strong. But this one, I think probably it'll be another winner for the president.
Okay, so that's right. I think he's like 9 out of 10 in endorsement so far. But Audrey, there are many Republicans in Kansas who are very worried about this endorsement because they think Kobach is going to be too far to the right, even for Kansas voters, and it could give Democrats an actual opportunity to take that governor's seat.
Which is amazing. In fact, I was just listening to a Democratic consultant this morning on Fox talking about how she was actually very excited that he had gotten that endorsement. And, you know, there is some division. And there's a lot of sort of chaos that comes. That's the new word. When you get that endorsement, there's lift. And the data suggests that Trump does help with undecided voters.
Well, I heard that on the special elections, Trump's guy has lost in every one of those now.
Well,
elections, that's those special elections, not the big standard primaries.
Okay. Karen Handel, the president did not. Did the president actually endorse Karen Handel before?
Yes.
Okay, that I didn't recall, as a matter of fact.
I didn't either.
I don't recall that. All right. So, but that's interesting. We got the Kansas race that people are paying attention to today because Democrats do see it as an opening for them. So instead of talking, we got a bunch of other things on the agenda, which we'll put on hold. Maybe we'll get to them later in the show. But the race that everyone is watching today that could have implications for Georgia, certainly for other races across the country. And Kevin, this is where we call on your expertise. The Ohio 12th District Special Congressional Election. The voters are out at the polls right now. And you've got a really fascinating dynamic here. You've got Democrat Danny O'Connor facing a legislator, a Republican legislator, Troy Balderson. First of all, why is that seat empty? It's not because of some scandal. It's not because the incumbent did something wrong. It's because the incumbent said, I've had it with being in Washington.
Right. Pat DeBerry, I mean, he was a longtime congressman and really had never had any trouble, I don't think, getting reelected in a reliably Republican district. And then this has changed everything. One of the things I thought was sort of humorous is coverage of Trump's rally there the other night. Apparently, every news account I read talked about how hot it was. In other words, they had it in some kind of arena or gathering place.
Yeah, the air conditioning went out.
Yeah, and that seemed to be the obsession of the media and people attending.
So. Let's hear just
the
one of the
glare on his skin was not so obvious.
And Mark, here's one of the interesting things. The reason we talk about this race and are, of course, interested in it is this is a district that shouldn't even be close.
Right.
There's no reason in the world why a Republican shouldn't be walking away. It's been that seat has been in safe Republicans' hands, I think, since 1980. And
there's truth to that. There is truth to that. Like everything else, there's truth to it, but it's not the only truth. The truth also is that the Republican has done very little television there and is, by all accounts, kind of
he's a pretty lackluster candidate.
Boring candidate.
Yeah. Awkward. And, yeah. Awkward.
The Democrats have picked an excellent 31-year-old candidate who has run a very good campaign, and there's no question, and I'm sure Senator Ork would agree with this. They are motivated to win this. I don't know which way this comes down. I do find it ironic that apparently this is the district. This might be good for the Republicans to remember that the Shawshank Redemption prison scene was filmed.
Kevin, are you aware of that?
That's true.
That
old Ohio penitentiary is a scene for some movies. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, with the lead up, that this was one of the districts and candidates that Obama did not endorse.
And probably would have been counterproductive to do so.
Yeah, I think there's certainly that. Beto O'Rourke in Texas. It makes no sense for the president to jump into the former president, because it's only going to alienate Republican voters and drive them to the polls.
And this seat was Kasich's seat, is that right, when he originally went to Congress?
Correct.
And he pointed out in the last several hours that Trump was not invited to come in and bring his endorsement to that district. And that is a suburban district. And we know what's happening in the suburbs today with the Democratic vote swelling.
Yeah, okay.
What people are mad at here, by the way, if you look at the surveys on this, they're mad at the health care issue. The Republicans that are falling off the arena are a little bit older and they have health care issues. And when the Republicans failed to repeal repeal Obamacare, their numbers have never regained.
All right, let's listen to how the Democrat is positioning himself with voters there to try to win this seat. This is just one of a number of commercials that he's been running, but it's one that I think represents pretty safely the appeal he's making. This is Danny O'Connor talking to voters in the 12th District of Ohio.
People in Central Ohio, they want better roads. They want better bridges. They want to invest in their own community. They want to see a return on investment. I will work with congressional Republicans. I'll work with President Trump. I'll work with congressional Democrats if folks will sit down and be serious and commit to rebuilding this country so that people who are ready to go to work have the opportunity to do that. We have a chance to send a message, not about partisanship, but about pragmatism. That's what's at stake.
All right, here's your toss-up question. What do you think?
Well, what's the difference in his message and Stacey Abrams? Right down the same line, pragmatic, work across the aisle, get things done for Georgians.
Well, maybe that's one of the reasons.
No, that's not true. It's actually very different. He is campaigning as a centrist. He openly was campaigning, saying that he would vote against Pelosi over and over. This was a central tenet to his campaign. In July, he had a sort of a press interview with Chris Matthews and switched his position for the purpose of one interview and said, well, I'll vote for whoever the Democrats put up.
Yeah, that was probably his worst moment.
When he made that mistake, everything now becomes a question about him. Now, I'm not saying that he will win or lose because of that, but it accentuated that he's not quite the, you know, happy-go-lucky non-politician that he's putting himself off to be.
I mean, one thing I try to remember about this is I get that it's a competitive race. I get the Democratic enthusiasm and all that. But you got to remember that this district is a result of 20 years of Republican strategy, which was all about controlling drawing of the districts. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, maybe it's competitive and all that, but the advantage is still very much a Republican advantage.
Yeah, but it's...
I couldn't resist either, Bill. I contacted Laura Bischoff, who's a reporter for the Dayton Daily News via Twitter, asked her what she thought. Like a good journalist, she would not pick.
What did she say exactly,
said,
Kevin?
I think O'Connor will come closer than Ossoff.
Well,
that's
sure
mighty close.
Will win.
Yeah.
That's close. Audrey, should the President of the United States even have to spend an evening in Central Ohio propping up a Republican candidate in a district that the President
runs? It sounds like Bill's taking
like...
a shot at Ohio here. I've made that beautiful drive on Interstate 71.
I spent my first two college years at Miami of Ohio, just below where
just
that congressional
first
district
is. You want to tell us what happened?
Yeah. Audrey, should the President even have to be doing propping up a Republican in a safe Republican district? That tells me a lot right there.
Well, you know, that's a question, but I would also tell you that if he wasn't out there doing it, it would be bad for him and bad for the party. So.
Okay, well, we know that he went because he likes to appear in these big rallies, but Nan, come on.
Well, what I'm saying, again, guys, suburbs.
Yeah, but here's
and
the
talking pollster. About the real problem. No, let me talk about the real problems that people are encountering and that people want to see us come together across the aisle and come with real solutions. And that's the message that the Democrat is delivering there. And in the suburbs, I have heard it said when Trump comes in, what that does is blows up, excites the Democratic vote. And the Republicans are not
well, and that's the
middle.
Key.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So, and Mark, you could probably jump in on this. So, when you talk to practitioners and when you talk to people on the ground in Ohio, you know, strategically, the hope is that the Democrats will come out in large numbers and they will actually vote across the board, and that those suburban women in particular will stay home because they're not as excited. Maybe they're on vacation prior to school starting, but the fact that they dislike Trump and he was there. And here's the big deal. So with messaging, Danny O'Rourke is not as scary. So that, you know, we talked about negative ads and how they make you fear your opponent and you ratchet it up again. So they're not as afraid of Danny O'Rourke.
As they are of whom? What are you comparing it to?
Someone that on the Republican side might paint someone as an ultra, ultra progressive, whatever that is, whatever that we in the lingo terms, when we talk about, you know, pitch cards and messaging, everybody uses something called a Satan. Who is the Satan?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to pinpoint. It would have been hard for the Republicans to have painted Danny O'Rourke as some crazy left-wing lunatic.
Yeah, I think because in parts of the Republican world, there's a strong connection drawn. If you are a person of color, you're a wild-eyed radical.
All right, let me...
And Danny is a white... white boy with an Irish name.
Danny O'Connor.
Yeah.
Well, Riley,
yeah,
you know how important that could be.
It's not Dan, it's Danny.
That's right.
This is where polls, not just the one, I'm not talking about the one we released today, but I'm saying polls in general may fail this fall to identify. If you poll everybody, they're going to find head-to-head races all over the place. That means people pretty much even. But the issue is going to be getting the Republicans enthusiastic enough to go vote.
Yep.
When Obamacare repeal failed, it really, you saw a huge tanking in Republican enthusiasm for
and
this
debt.
Congress and somewhat for
and debt now. But, people are concerned about
and debt. I agree with you.
And people are concerned about Russia.
But the issue is the Democrats are enthused. So when Trump comes to town, it's not to change anybody's mind. If anything, it's almost the opposite. It's to grab hold of the dependable right and get them out to vote to say there is more here than just Obamacare.
All right.
Well, yeah.
I've
to
got
appeal.
It. You want to make one last comment before the break, Audrey?
Well, and he's trying to get those rural counties that are in that district to come out. But it's the margins that are going to be crazy in that district. It's like, can you increase all that Franklin County and Delaware turnout? It doesn't matter because there may not be as many votes in the rural counties turning
out. And there's another story about Obamacare and what went with it or didn't go with it in Congress, and that is that Governor Kasich expanded Medicaid, like our governor should have done, and things are going well on that front, and there are all sorts of voters and families out there that want that, and that's another whole narrative, Mark.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I've got to get to a break. I will say one thing, and Nan, this goes to something you said, Mark. When we come back, I'm going to ask you to comment on it. This is from Nate Silver, 538 blog, one of the best numbers crunchers in the business. Most districts, along with one state, that have hosted federal special elections since Trump's inauguration lean strongly toward Republicans. Most of those races were decided only by single digits. In other words, Democratic enthusiasm, Trump's unpopularity, and the normal, when he's a mean reversion tendency of midterm election cycles, I guess meaning flipping from the party in power,
right,
have transformed normally safe Republican seats into nail biters. Okay, that's a way to set up. We got a great comment from Laura Adams, who said on Facebook Live, "Wake me up when Ohio discussion ends, please." Wake up, Laura, because what we want to do next is find out whether this predicts in any way, the 12th district up there is in any way predictive of what could happen in Georgia. Let's take a break and we'll come back and discuss it.
On the next Fresh Air, Trump's billionaire friend who helped connect Trump to Arab princes. We talk with New York Times reporter David Kirkpatrick. We'll also discuss his new book about covering the Egyptian Revolution and subsequent coup when Kirkpatrick was Cairo bureau chief. It's also about the Obama administration's response. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
All right, Audrey Haynes, now that I hope at least Laura Adams is back awake, what do we think the 12th District might tell us about the Georgia, the two congressional races in which we have Democrats up in the 6th and 7th District challenging Republicans who some people feel Karen Handel in the 6th, Rob Woodall in the 7th, Lucy McBath running as Democrat in the 6th, Carolyn Bordeaux in the 7th. Are we going to learn anything tonight from the 12th district that might be instructive to what happens in this state?
Well, we're going to learn who the winner is, which we're all wondering about. And,
maybe.
Oh. Might be a recount. Yeah. But, we're going to learn a lot about, you know, who's turning out, why they're turning out. We're going to break down all that information, and we're going to apply it at home. We're going to apply it across the country because the big question for political science is, you know, is this the crest? Are we going through a political realignment now that we have social media and we're all connected? Are realignments going to happen more quickly? You know, are we going to, what kind of partisan change? Is the Republican Party changing? Are all those suburban votes that are more educated and make more money, are they starting to feel uncomfortable in the Republican Party as it exists right now. What will happen to moderate Democrats? Well, I mean, we don't know because we haven't seen all of this play out, but it's actually very fascinating, and we can learn a lot from every single election that's going on across the country.
Mark, what do you expect you might learn by the results of this election tonight as it relates to Georgia, if anything?
Well, for our part of it, this is a more Republican district, but it probably is not that dissimilar from the Karen Handel seat. We all talked about the same issue back when it was going on. Trump endorsed. Is it going to scare away young people, and is it going to scare away suburban housewives and that sort of? We're having that same conversation. The Republicans continue to win these elections, and there have not been a lot of swing districts. What I'm going to be curious about, actually more than anything, is as one of your listeners was saying, wake me up when we're not talking about Ohio anymore. But what we're going to see about Ohio here is what does that mean for Gwinnett County and for Forsyth County with Rob Woodall? That's probably the Republican seat that may be it's trending a little more Democratic. Is that going to be viable this year? That's how it applies to Georgia, and that's why it's important to us. I don't think anybody in the state thinks people like Barry Loudermilk or Buddy Carter, none of them are vulnerable. The one that is probably highly unlikely but still possible is the Rob Woodall district.
Kevin, are you going to be watching? This is your old home territory.
Yeah, I'll be curious, but I mean, I know this may sound cynical. I just think the Republicans, with the way they've drawn the districts and what's gone on, they have created an advantage that's virtually impossible to overcome. And I get, hey, these are all very, very competitive, but as Mark pointed out, the Republicans are still winning.
Yeah.
But Kevin, we closed a 22-point gap at the last time Handel was on the ballot with Ossoff.
But she still won, right?
Yes, she did, by a sliver.
That was not a 22-point gap. District has always been much closer than
Price.
That.
Price won by 60,
and she ended up winning by 52 or 54.
Can I tell you what one outcome is, you know, winning or not? It changes the way candidates behave. When they see the margins change that way, it sometimes changes the messaging and their voting behavior, too.
We discovered there are a whole lot of Democratic voters in that district.
You know what's interesting about how this applies to Georgia, and then I'll
no, we need to hear this.
I find it interesting that nobody has proposed a massive, major upgrade to our transportation system, which I think would be huge to the suburban voters. And I don't know this to be true, but I may be the only person in this room who actually lives in suburban Atlanta. I don't know about Kevin, but you're in Athens.
I'm downtown Atlanta. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
But that is I would have to say the number one thing that people look at schools and they understand the state's involved, but it's not the state's responsibility. They don't view it to fix. But transportation is, and I would like to see what the candidates are proposing, including public-private partnerships.
Daniel O'Rourke's talking about it.
Yes.
And Stacey was involved in
the traffic that we have.
Kevin, actually, there was a conversation on this show the other day about just that. During one of the debates in the primary runoff season, Cagle and Kemp were asked here at George Public Broadcasting, one of the Atlanta Press Club debates, to give their feelings or state their positions on expanding transit. And I was a little surprised, especially given that we just went through a legislative session that Nan Orrick certainly knows about, in which the first time ever Republicans in big numbers finally said, yes, we want to get behind transit. We know we need transit. And both Cagle and Kemp kind of they backed away from the issue.
And neither, that's right. Voting
that's
on
right.
that this
right.
year.
Right. Neither Kevin,
will pass.
Neither Kevin was right. willing to say, when I'm governor, I am going to be
that's
going
right.
all out.
That's right.
That surprised me in a way.
It doesn't surprise me that much because aren't all candidates trying to make as few actual commitments as they can in that situation?
But Mark,
we've been stalled on transportation in this state because the Republican leadership has refused to act. It has refused to act. I've watched it. I'm on the front row of it. And their own caucus, they cannot get the Republican votes to vote for transportation. They have to come to the Democrats, and we put our votes in, and then they put some Republican votes in.
Be that as it may,
and the chamber has
forced said this is an issue that voters want to hear about. If you were
advising, they're going to pass it in Gwinnett County this year. We haven't polled it this time, but I've polled it in Gwinnett
in
the past.
Now in March of next year.
It's like 70% support.
And they're delaying it as long as possible. As long as possible and costing the voters extra money to run a special election instead of putting it in this fall election, the general election, when it's going to be a big turnout.
Audrey, you were nodding very vigorously when Mark was saying somebody, you know, we expect the candidates to be a addressing transit is a big issue, yeah?
Well, and I would say Democratic candidates, too. I was thinking of it as a strategic message.
Absolutely.
Because if you've watched what's gone on in Congress, we had Obamacare cannot be repealed, major divisions within the party, huge number of Republicans retiring, unhappy with, you know, what they felt was going on and the tactics and so on. We had the tax bill, but the tax bill is not something, you know, people are talking about as much, you know. And Ohio and Georgia are places where there are a lot of people who, even though the employment numbers are up, wages are still stagnant, and infrastructure is not something that Trump has been able to deal with. It's something that he promised, that he talked about on the campaign trail. So, you know, there may be some, you know, weak Republicans who, again, may feel a little uncomfortable or let down. Because one thing that happens with candidates, you know, we love our villains. We actually, the research shows that when we buy into a candidate, we want to love the candidate. They become our superhero almost. But guess what we do in, well, humans do. When they fail us, we don't like them anymore. They've let us down. And so you may see some Republicans who are unhappy that those things haven't been addressed, like you were saying, with Obamacare. The problem is, where will they go?
Well, Kevin, do you want to jump in?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I might not be thinking about it as deeply as everybody else. I mean, in the end, what's really going to happen is there's a very small number of people in the middle.
That's right.
And it's who gets to them.
Well, and
no,
that's
it's not who gets to them, because there are not enough people in the middle to swing.
There has
85,000 people are swing vote back and forth.
But there's only 20% strong partisans. I mean, there are a lot of people who are weak partisans that will move in a given election.
That's right.
We're out of time.
No.
We're
going to talk after the show.
I do want to say one thing about this conversation you just are having. There has been debate, and there will continue to be, among panels on this show since we started talking about the general election. There are panelists on the show who have absolutely insisted that this election, both parties will run to their bases, and there will be no center, whereas others are saying, don't be ridiculous, you've got to secure your base and then win those voters to the middle. And the fact that that the panelists who rotate in and out here, all of whom are very smart political observers, can't figure out what that means, I think fascinating, isn't it?
You know, I'm sure part of it must be our, you know, individual desire driven. You know, I would love to see more discussion as a political scientist on issues and so on.
And we stand for democracy, the Democrats do. We want to expand democracy and bring all the people in to vote.
This is why Nan Orick has gotten some of the most polarized messages on Facebook Live today. She is fierce in her defense of her party. That's it. We're out of time. Mark Rountree, Audrey Haynes, Kevin Riley, Nan Orick, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you
for listening, watching on Facebook Live. We'll be back again tomorrow at 2:00.